This time, they were certain.
Everywhere Millerites looked, they thought they saw proof that the end was coming, proof that this world was due to be transformed.
They had put their affairs in order. Some had sold everything they owned.
They're waiting for the literal return of Jesus Christ and the destruction of the wicked and the vindication of the righteous.
They gathered in groups small and large throughout the country, in homes, on farms, some, they say, on rooftops.
The minute midnight, the 22nd strikes, they're gathered together and waiting sort of breathlessly for this moment.
The moment had been foretold by William Miller, a Pittsfield-born preacher and unlikely prophet, explains David Holland, professor of religious history at Harvard's Divinity School.
He lost his faith in Christianity for a time until he was involved in the War of 1812, where he had some pretty profound existential experiences.
Miller's deep concerns with death and the afterlife following the war drove him back to the Bible, where he took a particular interest in the books of Daniel and Revelations.
He believed that he had cracked the millennial code, that he had determined roughly when the second coming of Jesus Christ would take place, and he had determined that it would be very soon.
By the 1930s, Miller's prediction had attracted a small following around his home on the New York-Vermont border. But when he hooked up with Boston-based publisher Joshua Himes, the Millerite movement exploded. Himes launched a Millerite newspaper, published pamphlets, and organized camp meetings, rallies, and lectures.
William Miller does travel through Massachusetts repeatedly, drawing huge crowds and, in some cases, a great deal of opposition. It was a controversial message.
But one that struck a chord with many, and not just those on the fringe. It was a time of great upheaval in America, says Holland, and Miller's message had uncanny resonance.
They're very much at the heart of Massachusetts society, and that's part of what made the movement so explosive.
Holland says that Miller had long been reticent to put an exact date on the second coming. But as the faction of believers grew to 50,000 nationwide, the pressure mounted. Miller's first prediction was vague, sometime between March of 1843 and March of 1844. When that passed without incident, he went back to the good book with renewed vigor.
The date, October 22nd, 1844, was identified as a sort of all-or-nothing Millerite bet.
And just like every end times prediction before, and everyone since, it was a bet they lost.
The devastation that hits is really hard to capture. You know, grown men weeping like children, and people profoundly traumatized, questioning God's existence, questioning the Bible's validity, these anchor points for their entire sense of themselves.
It would become known as the Great Disappointment. The Millerite movement was no more. Some found refuge with the Shakers and the Quakers. Others, like Ellen White, picked up the pieces and launched a new movement.
Ellen White began to have a series of visions in which the Lord guided her toward an explanation of the great disappointment, and she became one of the pieces around which a new religious movement formed that came to be known as the Seventh-day Adventists.
Today, the Adventists are an international church of some 18 million and growing. They run hospitals around the world and universities across the U.S. One is even running for president.
Ben Carson, a presidential candidate, very conspicuous in his Adventist faith.
And while it's pretty easy to look back today and scoff at the Millerites' naivete, Holland says that by doing so, you might just miss a pretty important point.
That idea that the human story has a structure to it, has a narrative, has a happy ending for those who have played it right, that's a message that still resonates with a lot of people.
The Great Disappointment, when tens of thousands of believers were crushed and the Adventist movement was born 171 years ago this week. From the Curiosity Desk, I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.